From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 11th day of March 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vakes. She's with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, Drew Lerner will be here to detail what's been happening in the world of agriculture from South America to North America and all points in between. And along the way, I'll update you on the agricultural news for the afternoon, what's been happening in Washington, D.C., as it's related to the SREs, the small refinery exemptions, coronavirus, and SNAP benefits, right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago, March corn today 0.75 cents lower, $3.79 1/4. The May at 3.74 1/2 down 3, and July 3 lower, 3.76 1/2 the settlement price. December corn 3.77 down 3.5 cents as well. March contract in the soybeans 5.25 lower. The settlement price at 8.67 3/4 cents. May futures 8.73 1/4 down 3, and July down 3 3/4 at 8.80 1/2. November beans 4 3/4 lower at 8.86 3/4. Of a cent. The bean oil off 14 cents at 27.30. Bean meal unchanged at 295.90. July soft red winter wheat down 8 1/4 cents at $5.13 1/4. The July hard red at 4.42 3/4, 9 1/4 cents lower. Live cattle futures in the April contract at $103.07 1/2 cents down $2.37 1/2. The June there, $97.25 down $2.27 1/2 as well. March feeder cattle down 4.42 1/2 at 123.32 1/2. The April at 123.52 1/2, also down $4.42 1/2. Those all on expanded limits. April lean hogs $1.12 1/2 lower at $63.87 1/2. The crude oil for the day down $1.72 a barrel. It's at $32.62. The ethanol futures down 2 2/10 of a cent. Heating oil or diesel fuel down 2 1/10, and the gasoline off 5 7/10 of a cent today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average around 1,250 points lower, but that's changing rapidly. The U.S. dollar is up 0.1, and the gold futures down $16.60 at $1,642.50. We're now joined by Jackie Vakes. She's from Stuart Peterson, actually Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson, in Hollister, Missouri, to help us take a look at what's happened in the agricultural markets for today and make sense of what's been happening in the world. Hey, Jackie, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're welcome. You know I love it.
Let's start with support and resistance for the day, please.
Okay. May has support at 366, 335, and $3 in corn. Resistance 390, 406, and 422. And the crossover point between the trend line and the downtrend line are 335.5. July corn support at 363, 325, and $3. Resistance 401, 418, and 446, excuse me. And the crossover line for that is 329.5. On beans, we've got support in May at 860, 780, 742. Resistance 908, 948, and 988. And the channel is still in place, the high being 1053, the low being 762. July beans, 866 support, 854, and 820. And then resistance at 890, 903, and 926. And the crossover point in July beans is at 941.
I like the idea that the resistance for corn is still above $4. That's kind of nice. And that the channel, while it's really big for soybeans and wide, remains in place. Those are probably both still decent news, I think, for the marketplace, right?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, as bad as things have seemed to be, and how much flying around we've done, it hasn't done any real major damage at this point in time.
What's the managed money look like for the week?
Very interesting. On soft red wheat, they lowered their long position to 18,000 from 41,000. On corn, they're short 90 compared to 107 last week. They are short 51 compared to 101 contracts on beans. So they really, really have lightened up on that one, almost half. They're short 29,000 versus 51,000 on soy meal, and they've changed to net short 1,000 on soy oil from being net long last week of 26,000. you know, soy oil is probably the one that has taken it the hardest out of anything when you look at beans.
What'd you make of any of the export inspections for the week?
Well, we're getting a little weaker, it seems like. Wheat exports running 9% ahead of last year. Last week it was 10. Corn is 44% behind, so it's coming along, 49% last week. Soybeans 12% ahead, 15% last week. So, you know, we're doing okay. I think that what we're starting to do is we're starting to grind through some of that front loading that we saw on the corn, and that's why it's beginning to get better.
Yesterday, the United States Department of Agriculture updated the World Agricultural Supply and Demand, or WASD, estimates. When there wasn't a lot that happened there, were you able to pull any plums from the numbers?
Well, I'll tell you what, it was really kind of boring when you look at the U.S. side, because they left the carryouts identical on corn, just 1 million metric tons higher on beans and identical on wheat. The only significant thing they did is the cash price on corn dropped by a nickel to $3.80 and on beans to $8.75, from $8.75 down to $8.70. Now, when you look at the world numbers, there we had a little more interesting things going on. We saw higher carryout on corn, we saw a higher carryout on beans, and we saw a higher carryout, a little lower carryout than last month on wheat. Basically, pricing being the same. But when you look at the big picture, it's because it's coming out of Brazil. You know, Brazil came in at 126 million metric tons of of production. That's unbelievably high. And certainly not what was expected. The market was expecting it to be 125, just like it was the last time. So that has put a little bit of pressure on everything. When you look at Brazil, I got a few export numbers, Todd. They're projected to export 77 million metric tons this year. And Argentina is expected to actually export 8.2 million metric tons. That's lower than last year. So, you know, I think one of the things that we see happening is we're really seeing the Brazilians and the Argentinians step up to the plate. I'll talk about it when we get down into that part of it. But I think that they're going to move as much grain as they can possibly move in the shortest amount of time because of the currency exchange rate. And so you look at the big picture, and I think in general, it didn't give us an awful lot. But just enough, I guess, to satisfy everything and go on from there. You know, when you look at the markets, it's really tough sometimes to realize that, you know, we're in an energy market ever since we got into ethanol and biodiesel. And so, you know, when you have crude go down the toilet, don't expect to see corn and beans going up. Not for a while anyway.
You mentioned exports and some of the other nations around the planet. I take it you dug out some information?
Oh, I did. Yeah, I've been looking at a lot of different things, you know, as far as exports and imports both. You know, when you look at the Brazilians, 74.6 million metric tons of exports for this year on beans was 76 last year. But Argentina, 7 million metric tons higher than they were last year as they, you know, recover from all of their issues. The imports from China, soybeans, 82.5 million metric tons versus 94 last year. And I'm certain that is part of African swine fever, you know, and the COVID virus that's going on. They are projected to import more corn, 4.5 million metric tons versus 3.5 last year. Mexico is also on track to, again, import more corn from us, which is just plain awesome, you know. And so those are all good things.
Is there anything else, Jackie?
I got a couple interesting things. I think that people, I found this to be comforting, I guess. China, unknown, was back in the export market today buying beans. Good thing. And this is the good part. Some of the factories and the other businesses in the province of Hubei, in the city of Wuhan, where we all know COVID started, were allowed to reopen today.
Oh, that is good news.
That is very good news, you know. And so we'll see once whether this is just a you know, a step on the part of the government to try and reassure people, but that I thought that was exciting. When you look at Brazil, oh my goodness, I referred to a little bit to this before. They set in another new all-time low on the real exchange rate. It's 4.7-1 right now, and this is causing really aggressive farmer selling. I mean, these are unprecedented prices for them. in that respect. And so I expect their selling to be really, really brisk. They've sold 55% of their soybean crop compared to 43% last year. Next year's crop, they've got 13% sold compared to 5%. And if you look at Mato Grosso, which of course is the largest thing, 70% of this year's crop is sold and 32% of next year's crop is sold. That's really something. And when you look at where they are harvest-wise, 50 to 55% are harvested compared to 55% last year on the soybean crop. And Mato Grosso is actually at 91.4% harvested. They're usually the first one to finish. I'll switch over to Argentina. They did raise their export taxes on beans to 33%, but this is the catch. They also raised soy oil and soy meal to 33%. And those two products have always been 3% less than beans. And they did this because they wanted to encourage processors, you know, make meal rather than export beans, which, you know, that has made them now the largest exporter of meal. So it's going to be interesting to see what this move does to them and what it does to the crushers. Now, the Rural Federation of Argentina, they held a four-day strike. And now they've been joined by the four farmer organizations who said, we're not going to sell any products during any strikes that are going on either. So, you know, the Argentine economy is in dire shape. They've got high inflation, devalued currency, a recession that's coming on. Their unemployment is terrible, and they've got increasing poverty. So, you know, what the government is doing is certainly not helping the general population. But more to come later, I guess.
Hey, thanks so much, and we'll talk with you again soon.
You betcha. Have a good one.
You too. That's Jackie Vec. She's with Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson. In today's agricultural news, we'll start here in the state of Illinois, where U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat and a member of the Senate Agriculture Committee, met with the Illinois Corn Growers Association to discuss agricultural priorities in the state, including crop conditions, trade, the lock and dam infrastructure, ethanol and biofuels, and the refinery waivers, also known as SRE, small refinery exemptions. The corn growers, he says, are an integral part of Illinois' agricultural economy, and that the federal government needs to ensure some certainty for producers as they head into the 2020 planting season. Additionally, Durbin, who is the minority whip in the U.S. Senate, says the small refinery waivers being issued by the Trump administration have hurt the biofuels market, going on to say, it's time for the president to support our biofuels industry and to stop giving a break to large oil companies. Durbin has introduced a bipartisan bill with Senators Tammy Duckworth, also a Democrat of Illinois, and Deb Fisher, a Republican from Nebraska, that would require the United States Environmental Protection Agency to provide transparency with small refinery hardship waivers. On that note, the Trump administration has delayed a decision on whether to appeal a key ruling by the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in favor of the biofuels industry. Senate Finance Chair Chuck Grassley says a phone call by his fellow Iowa Senator Joni Ernst to President Trump convinced him to delay any appeal of a federal court ruling striking down three small refinery biofuel waivers.
It presumably worked with the president, as the administration has decided to ask for a two-week delay in whether or not they're going to appeal the 10th Circuit decision.
The decision leaves, Grassley says, more time for biofuel state lawmakers to lobby the EPA and Justice Department to follow the initial court ruling that Grassley says gives the president political cover.
I think the 10th Circuit gives him all of the credibility he needs to do what he said. And EPA says they're going to deliver the 15 billion gallons, so they take away the skepticism that farmers have about the sincerity of EPA getting the 15 billion gallons. The court has made it very clear that they've given too many waivers.
Grassley joined biofuel groups in criticizing Texas GOP Senator Ted Cruz and small refiners for pressing for an appeal of the waiver ruling. Well, USDA Secretary Sonny Perdue has reassured ag appropriators the department will grant states coronavirus waiver authority to administer free and reduced price lunches to low-income students when their schools shut down.
We've sent the message to all the states that they can preemptively assume a positive response once they ask and once the waiver request comes in. Certainly, when schools close, it doesn't make sense to have to go to congregate feeding areas because that's the purpose of closing schools.
In a related note, Secretary Perdue says states, meantime, already have, quote, good cause authority under the SNAP rules to waive existing or about to be implemented new USDA work and training requirements for adults to be eligible for SNAP. And finally today, we'll stick with food, feeding, and farm policy issues. House agriculture leaders yesterday sent a clear message to the Trump administration, this according to Politico, in a letter to congressional budget writers. They say hands off the farm bill. The panel's annual budget views and estimates document warned against cutting safety net programs as trade headwinds and the coronavirus threaten farmers and food stamp recipients. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. On this Wednesday, let's check in on the weather forecast for the day. We're joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Hey, Drew, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you. It's another good day here. At least it's not raining right now. That's an important thing.
Same here, too. It looks like it'll be a nice day. We'll talk more about that forecast in the United States in just a moment. But I want to start in South America. Argentina, it looks like, got some rainfall overnight, is that right?
Oh, yes. Very, very nice, extremely well-timed event took place last night. Rain totals of 1 to 3 inches occurred in general across the northwest half of Argentina. And the heart of that region in the northwest, where the most important corn and soybeans are produced in the state, or province, saw totals that got upwards to about 5.5 inches. So it was a very, very good event. Now, what you need to know is that the ground was completely void of moisture in the topsoil down about 18 inches before this rain event started, and subsoil moisture was still marginally adequate to short. So the crops were hanging on by a thread, and then this rain event came along and really helped them out a lot. Now, there's a lot of other areas in Argentina that are also suffering from the same level of dryness and crop stress right now. The good news is that this disturbance is going to move very slowly to the north over the next few days, and so Cordoba and Santa Fe, which are the states or provinces immediately to the north, will likely see significant rain as well. And there will also be more moisture for Buenos Aires. So by the time we're done with the weekend, all of the key grain and oilseed producing areas in the heart of Argentina will have had significant relief. And I think we will have saved the yield potentials for these late-season crops, like the double-crop soybeans, the late corn, peanuts. Even the sorghum crop is probably going to benefit greatly from this particular environment. Now, northeastern parts of Argentina may not do quite so well, at least not until we get to the latter half of the weekend and early next week, but they will also get some relief up there. So like I said, this was almost an epic event, and certainly will help those crops tremendously.
USDA and CONAB both looking towards pretty good yields for second crop corn in Brazil at this point. That crop just going in the ground in some spaces. What do you see for them?
Yeah, you know, it's been drying out in center west and southern Brazil over the past 10 days to 2 weeks. Actually, it's been 2 full weeks now, and maybe a little bit longer for a couple of locations. So the topsoil is drying out fairly quickly. Unlike Argentina, the soil in that particular part of Brazil is very sandy, and it doesn't take long for it to become too dry. So my guess is that some of that production area is now considered to be too dry, even though their subsoil moisture is still rated somewhat favorably. A little stress at this point is not a big deal. Probably the most important thing is the fact that it did dry down for this short-term period. That was very helpful in getting the late soybean harvest completed in many locations that were running a little behind, and also the second season corn getting put into the ground in a more timely manner. I understand that a lot of that crop that gets planted beyond March 15th is really not very successful. It always runs into dryness, and some farmers just refuse to plant after that date. So the 15th is obviously just coming up around the corner here over the weekend, and so again, this opportunity to get into the fields was really, really important. Now, it will start raining next week, probably late Sunday, but more likely Monday and Tuesday, scattered showers will develop. It won't be heavy rain, but at least it'll take the edge of the stress down by a notch, and then better rains will come later next week and into the following weekend, and so it should be a good environment for those crops at least to get started with. Now, one last comment I do need to make. I think the monsoon will end normally in Brazil this year, and that means that in April we're going to see the rains shut down. So we only have a few weeks here to get abundant rains to fall across the heart of that second season crop production area. If they end a little early, that crop is going to be even more threatened by lower yield. So we'll need to watch this real closely over these next several weeks.
We started our conversation by discussing the nice days we've been having here in the United States, across a large part of the Midwest, in fact. And I know farmers get the itch early on and they start to scratch around in the soil. I've seen even some planters running in Illinois, at least just, you know, kind of putting some experiments out. What do you see?
Well, I think that we're headed for a very stormy period, actually, for much of the lower Midwest, the Delta and the southeastern states, at least the interior southeast, specifically the Tennessee River Basin area. These areas will see one storm after another for the next week to 10 days. And by the time we get out towards the latter part of next week, we're probably looking at 3 to 8 inches of rain on top of saturated soil for a big part of the central and northern parts of the Delta and the Tennessee Basin. That's where the worst flooding situation is likely to evolve. Now, there'll be some breaks in the precipitation, but not nearly long enough to drain off the fields and get the rivers to go down. So the potential for more significant flooding will be on the rise as we move through this period of time. For areas in the heart of the Midwest, from northern Missouri and eastern Iowa into Michigan and Ohio, there will be frequent rains in these areas as well, but it shouldn't be as much volume. The ground will stay saturated, and we will see some significant runoff in a few areas, but I don't anticipate any serious flooding in those areas. But certainly a lot of cloudiness, a lot of mildish temperatures, and plenty of moisture.
What do you see along the coastlines, Florida, Texas, those places that should be warm? It looks like they're going to be really warm next week.
Yeah, you know, that's part of the problem for all the moisture in the heart of the country, at least heart of the Midwest and the Delta and the Tennessee River basins, because it's quite cool in the northern plains and very warm in those Gulf coastal regions. And if anyone's headed in those locations over this next couple of weeks, we're probably going to see some really nice weather. The humidity will be up, but that's pretty normal. And we'll look for temperatures that will get into the 80s on a frequent basis from the Texas coastal bend area all the way through Louisiana and all the way over into Florida. So it might be a good opportunity for those folks that are trying to escape all the muck in the Midwest for a spring break.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You bet. Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.